So the first cup is your career. Find like what makes you money, regardless of whatever role that is your career cup. You fill that with your work. Your second cup is the soul and self. I know that sounds a little bit woo-woo. Soul and self means what are the things that are not financial, you don't make money out of them. They are the things that fill you and you get enjoyment out of. The third one is human connection. Humans are people that love to be around others. So when we look at when I burnt out in the pandemic, the soul and self and the human connection cup, dry, because you couldn't go to the gym, you couldn't do the things that you loved, and you couldn't see the people that really fill your cup. So the career cup was absolutely overflowing. So I was like, oh, wow, this was an imbalance thing. So basically then what you want to have a look at, and I also say this in terms, if you're wanting to do New Year's resolutions and planning, you want to actually have a look at, instead of like, I want to like do all these things in my career and I want to do X, 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 we're very actually often to go straight to the aspirational and career. But what about all the other things that are going to keep you along the way?
Hello and welcome to the Brand My Career podcast. I'm your host, Alex Cutterfield, and I'm so glad you're joining me today. My goal is to help you take ownership of your career, find your people through personal branding and networking, and take career-enhancing action. Managing your life and career can be hard. That's why every fortnight I'll be releasing an episode where I interview a diverse range of guests that will help you find clarity and build confidence in your career. Let's get into it. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Brand My Career podcast. Today I have Kim James with me and super excited to have you on for a chat. How are you, Kim?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I think we first started bonding over our dogs on LinkedIn. It's always a great place to start off a connection with someone. But then we obviously got chatting about how we're pretty aligned in our values around career advice and career support and stuff. So, yeah, I was really keen to get you on and have a chat and to dig into some of that stuff today. Would you maybe want to just first share with our listeners like who you are and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, my name's Kim James. I have a business called Tangerine Tango. So my background, I've been in marketing for the last 10 years, definitely in the content marketing and digital marketing space, been in big corporate, big tech, SaaS, and also consultancy with the government. And then, yeah, last year took the plunge and left the salary role to start my own business. So now I work with brands, founders, and marketers on teaching them content marketing in a way that is actually upskilling themselves and their own people. On the other side of that, I also run the Career Girl Diaries, which is a media throughout TikTok and Instagram. And we talk about burnout, career, business, and really the habits in between. It's a space to really talk about how to take ownership of your career and put it into your hands so that you are in control of its trajectory, but also in a way that feels very nice and organic and not in a way that you burn yourself out like I did in my 20s. So, yeah, a lot of it is really based off what I wouldn't do again.
Oh, man, I'm sure the list is long and plenty for all of us, right, what we wouldn't do. But then also it's funny, all the things that we wouldn't do again, we probably wouldn't change either, right, because it's all shaped who we are now and the journey we're on. So, yeah, you're on Instagram, TikTok. We were just talking before we jumped on around all of what's been going on with TikTok over the last little bit. Could you give a little update on, I guess, and some context to what was happening there, how it's impacted you or and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2020, Trump brought in to look at banning TikTok unless it was sold to America. And then that was put into law as well with the Biden administration. So what we had seen is an element on the last 48 hours that it did come back. It was banned or shut down in black for about 14 hours. But I think regardless of the political side of it and where it will go, it's now in like a 90-day pause to look at an opportunity for a 50% sale to America. I think a really key thing of what I look at that is that cemented social media into the importance of our lives. I can't think of any other medium that has been such global news, has been the number one topic when a new president is coming into the United States. So for me, that's been in digital marketing the last 10 years, it had been something that we had seen the value of. And for many, it was a nice optional extra. But now it will be for those that is really going forward for brands, founders, marketers and alike. So I always get really excited looking at that because it just opens up opportunities for more people to develop their career and come into the workforce. But it also just means that there's going to be such a stronger emphasis on digital, on AI, and how we can like really supercharge our workflows through doing that. So yeah, I do a lot of corporate training with people on marketing as well, especially content marketing and where the industry is moving. So when I meet young people and they are just like get ready to get into their careers and just have this drive and passion that I had 10 years ago, where I came into the industry in social and content because of the fact that we had print newspapers and I was looking at the invoices that the business was paying to have physical print newspapers goes to hundreds of stores across the country. And I was like, oh, we could do that a lot easier if we move digital. So yeah, this is just a natural evolution of it. And I'm excited to kind of see where it goes.
Yeah. I was excited to get you on and chat with you because one of the things that I think about a lot, I guess, is the relationship between digital communications and career development and how we can be utilizing, you know, digital platforms to get information and good information to people about how they can take ownership of their career. And it obviously this opens up a lot of avenues to get advice to people that they wouldn't have had access to if the only way you could do it is paying for a professional careers coach and things like that. So yeah, I'm just really passionate about it. Obviously that's a driving force behind starting the podcast and having chats with cool people and getting that information out to people and stuff. But I'm just keen to hear your journey of what inspired you to launch the Career Girl Diaries. Obviously it sort of blew up in a way that you didn't think was going to, which is always the way with high achievers. they don't think it's going to happen, but you're obviously driven to make it happen and then it's gone really well. What was the driving force behind that for you?
I honestly didn't start with it of a element of talking about careers. So I have been in digital and I'm very much, I will never preach what I haven't practiced. I had a very great understanding of the traditional social media platforms. But then I was working with brands and government agencies. Everyone wants to know about TikTok. What do we need to know? How do we capitalize on it? And it's the Wild West compared to Instagram. So I was like, well, I need to start posting to then be able to teach others. So it was 2023 and I started posting and it was just a bit of this, bit of that, testing everything. But my team at the time were Gen Z and they would say to me, you give really good career advice because like you have been us. And it really goes back to the element of you never ask, if you're starting, you never ask for the absolute leader in the industry because they're too disconnected to where they were when they begun. Like if you ask Taylor Swift now what to do, she's so disconnected from when she started. It's a whole other different world. So because I was kind of at my just hit 30s, I had that hindsight to be able to look at what I had done, but it wasn't too disconnected that I couldn't really align to where they were. Yeah. And so, yeah, I just started making TikToks off the conversations I was having with team members or having with friends and all those kind of things. Like, I think I've always been someone that is very career driven and that friend that people go to, and it just blew up. It just went out of nowhere. And I was like, what is this? What have I opened? And I won't lie to you, I then didn't know what to do with it. People were contacting me being like, are you a career coach? And I'm like, no, I'm a marketer. Like, I don't know how to do that. So yeah, I think last year, like all things, you can kind of create something and then you don't know what to do with it. And you can extremely overthink it because we get so scared to try and make the right move. So we don't make any move because we're worried that if the move that we take is going to be the wrong one, then we're going to feel like a failure.
Yeah.
So yeah, last year I then just kind of took the pressure off myself. And a lot of what I kind of connected and people really resonated to was also the conversation about burnout. So I burnout in 2021, reached the absolute just breaking point, was in a work environment that, yeah, really didn't kind of support the opportunity to not reach that point. And I then just started talking about it because I had recovered. And when I burn out, there was two books in the library. No one was talking about burnout. And I'd never met anyone that kind of looked like, or like sounded like me. I was like, I hadn't met anyone that I could relate to, that was like, oh, that's what I think. Oh, that's what I was going through. I really resonate with that. Because there wasn't really many people that had had the conversation. So I just started saying those things. And also the practices that I started to put into life as well. So when it came to burnout, when you kind of recover, you have a whole lot of tools in your tool belt that stop you from habitual burnout. Because so many of us, we can get to a point where we are going really well and then we fall back into bad habits and we fall back into like teetering on the edge of burnout, and then you take care of yourself and then you keep going and then, oh, you fall back into bad habits again. So I have a lot of practices that I've implemented into my life now that I work for myself. Sometimes I work 7 days a week and I haven't burnt out. I've been nowhere near burnout and I've been working for myself for a year. So yeah, I just kind of started having those conversations and just let it evolve and grow. It's something now that I am very passionate about growing further and yeah, have more plans to kind of bring the evolution of it. But honestly, when people message me and they're like, I totally relate, I feel like I'm having a conversation with a friend, it just means so much to me because I think when it comes to your career, you're in high school and you go to a career fair, or the different universities come to your school and you hear about what you could study. So you finish school and you study. And then when you're studying, it feels like you're doing the thing, but you're not really doing the thing yet. You're studying to do the thing. And then you graduate. There is no handholding. There is no, what is the right move? Do I go corporate? Do I go small business? Do I work for myself? Do I take a gap year? What do I need on my resume? How do I negotiate a salary? No one teaches you that. And so I think that when we feel, especially in our 20s, really lost in our life, career is such a huge part of that because you're giving so much of your day to it. And I also completely agree with the saying that it's like your manager can have more influence over your mental health than anyone else in your life because you are in that situation 5 days a week. So, yeah, I really just try to bring what I've learned, also what I'm still learning as well. I think I got a bit stressed thinking that because I wasn't working corporate anymore, I wouldn't be relatable and I wouldn't relate. But I still had those experiences. And I, if anything, like I definitely, when I talk online, I don't say that people have to run a business to be happy. I'll never say that. I love working for myself and I'm very happy that I've taken this choice, but it's not for everyone. And I don't believe that we should be forcing that narrative. Like, first of all, if we're all business owners, who works in the business?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, isn't it? We have something like that thing around like, oh, am I still going to be relatable because I'm not in the corporate world anymore? But clearly it's not the fact that you're in corporate that made you relatable. Like, and it's what do you think are some of the traits of yourself that have made you relatable? Because I'd say that's what it is, not the job you had.
I think it's having honest conversations with people. When I did start working for myself, there's so much narrative of, oh my God, you're just going to turn it on a business and get 10 grand a month. When you go and work in a job, it's, oh, I'm just going to go and get the perfect career girly job. I'm going to have the perfect wardrobe. I'm going to have the perfect life. And I'm going to travel every single year to Europe. Absolutely not. Like, that is so far from the truth. When I started my career, I couldn't afford to buy nice clothes. I was buying all of my corporate outfits from the op shop and absolute slave, still wear probably most of them now anyway. So I think that I try to bring that conversation. Like I posted recently, like all the financial sacrifices I had to make to start a business. And I think it's kind of bringing that different view of, oh, like we right now have so much access to our peers. We have never had so much ability to see our competition and compare ourselves. And realistically, like then we actually start making decisions based off, well, if I was to then buy this car, is that what I want? Is that the right decision for me? Or am I buying that because that's what I want to be think that is seen as being successful? And I've been there. Like I absolutely made those decisions in my 20s, but it wasn't probably until I started working for myself where I had to take a massive financial sacrifice and really cut back on my lifestyle that I started to see the things that kind of were important to me and make those judgments. So yeah, I think it's an element of helping people not feel alone because we see online very similar to how we talk about when we see online of how people look and in the gym and living like a certain lifestyle and having a certain aesthetic. You can feel the same in your career and you might not start in your career, your perfect job. I didn't start in marketing. I started in plumbing. I was selling toilets in Parramatta. Like I did not have the job that I am now. And I have that conversation with people because, yeah, otherwise we can have just comparison is, yeah, the joy thief.
Yeah, yeah. It gets everyone, right? Like even starting a podcast and then you're looking at all the other people start a podcast at the same time and then you're seeing their growth versus yours and you start to, you know, compare yourself to people or, use them as the marker instead of just, am I doing what I want to do in the way that I want to do it? And all that sort of stuff. So,
yeah, a lot of people also don't have the conversation online of what it took to get there. Like building off of what you've just said, like I am speaking at the Melbourne Exhibition Centre in March this year, doing a keynote. They're expected, you know, well over 400 people to go to that. I'm so excited for that, but I haven't done a post about it, but I was thinking about it. Only a few years ago, I was in a situation where I was felt that I wasn't good enough to be a marketing manager. Like I was in a workplace where I really second-guessed myself and, whether or not I could even be a marketing manager. I left that role and then became a strategist for Australia. I left that role and then became a CMO, CCO and was working with government agencies and then now work for myself. So there's an element where not everyone kind of shows the parts and the steps that they took to get to where they are. And we all show the highlight reel when realistically only a few years ago, I was second guessing everything. And it's kind of sharing that journey for someone to go, Oh, hang on. Like you don't just start and then you're at level 10. No, yeah. Everyone's been taking the steps to get there. It's just not always the sexiest thing that gets shown online.
Yeah, absolutely. I can guarantee there's going to be people that see the photo of you up on stage and they go, oh, I could never do that. And it's like, one, that's exactly how you felt not all that long ago. And often it's a funny thing when you see, say, like you see a photo like that, and is that going to be your first time doing a keynote?
It's not actually, no. Yeah. So I've done it a fair bit in the past and I've done a fair bit of training, but that's probably going to be the biggest one.
Yeah.
I did it actually a fair few years ago as well. But nowhere near to this level. Yeah. Like that was like a event run in a business. This is people going, I want to spend money to come to this event.
Yeah.
And then messaging me, I'm so excited to see you. I can't wait to meet you. And then you're just like, how do you know who I am? And they're like, oh, I follow you on TikTok. And you're like, oh.
Yeah.
You're like, what do you mean?
and that's wild, right? And but people will see it and assume that's your normal. Like and it might become your normal because you're probably going to smash it out of the park and people rebook you and all of that. But people will sit and assume, she's just been doing that forever. And yeah, rather than realizing, oh no, this is actually something I'm really pumped about. This is a milestone for me. This is the biggest of this I've done yet. And it's taken a really long time of hard work to get there. But as soon as we see it, we normalize it as, oh, that's their normal and my normal's down here.
Yeah. We're really, it took, 8 years of presenting, meetings, ideas, data, pipelines, like what was going on, campaigns. Like I was in a situation where I think realistically I'm to have the presentation skills that I'll have for that. It came from constantly putting the reps in, presenting in meetings, running meetings, sharing my ideas, creating slide decks, getting like tweak and how to like engage a room and showcase the information that they need, but it not be overwhelming. Like it was a lot of years of doing that before there was even to this level. And I'm not perfect at it. I am so far from perfect at it. Like if anything, I know that I could definitely be a lot stronger at it. I actually had a manager once that was like really kind of hard on me and like my presentation skills. And I was just like, I remember getting frustrated being like, you don't say this to anyone else. Like why? I felt like I was getting picked on. And he was like, cause you have like the skills to do this on a bigger scale. Like I am kind of, pushing you to get better because you have ability for this to be outside of just presenting in these meetings. And I was like, oh, I didn't even think of that.
What are the skills?
A lot of it for me is, well, first of all, you've got the different areas. So first one is your slide deck. That takes so much kind of preparation into it. It is definitely an art to be able to have a slide deck that is engaging, has the right amount of information on it, and is not overwhelmed. I was in a creative agency for 2 years. Definitely not the place for me, but like long term. But it was absolutely phenomenal for deck creation. I've actually got 5 seminars, masterclass seminars in March that I've booked. And I was speaking to someone and he was talking about the deck. And I was like, don't worry, decks are my thing. So, yeah, definitely the art of slide deck is absolutely key. Then the next part is your talking points, because you have to have an element of what you are saying to people, the content, but also the engagement. And I bring that into also like sales conversations. So I was on a call yesterday, and as I was sharing information, I'm like talking with the marketers and I'm asking them questions and getting them to then realize within themselves what I'm saying and how they can apply storytelling to their own experiences, to the content. So there's that engagement piece, which is absolutely huge. And then there is your nonverbal. So there is the body language that you bring and just the energy, I think, as well. So I do speak very fast, just naturally, unfortunately, who I am. So when I get nervous, I speak faster. So I'm having to like calm myself down.
Yeah.
Definitely the like body language is a huge part as well. How you're like holding yourself. If you go in and you feel like you're showing on the outside very confident and know what you're talking about, other people will pick up on that energy. There's a bit of an art that comes to it, but whether or not that's on a scale of being in a conference to doing that in presenting in a team meeting or a whip, exact same skills. And it just takes the reps in to master it. And the same as like whenever I do episodes like this, like podcasts, the more that you do them, you get more succinct in actually telling your story. It's funny because I actually say to people that posting on TikTok is so good for your job because it will force you to get your point across succinctly, clearly, and with energy. And so if you're someone that you feel like you waffle a bit and you can't get your point across, post on TikTok. Try to make short form video. Like, you'll get very succinct in your messaging.
Yeah. That's probably a good kick up the butt for me to get more active on TikTok while we've got it, right?
Yeah.
I'm probably the opposite to you. I'm more inclined to be slow. And so for me, it's sort of like the challenge is trying to ramp myself up a bit versus you naturally fast. It's like, okay, remember to take a breath between my next sentence. Everyone's still processing.
Exactly.
But I guess my impression of you, like, I think your energy definitely is a superpower of yours. Like, you bring a great energy to a room, and I'm sure that is a big part of why you've done well in all the different things that you've done, is that I can understand how people would be saying, like, oh, like, I relate so much with what you say. Like, there's a sense of, like, oh, this person gets me. So, I hope
you learn those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like you've got natural bents, but then everything you can develop if you want to. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's also funny because a lot of people that are really, really great online, I would say probably a late 80% of the people that I've met who are huge personalities online, huge introverts in person. And so, like, you'd never know. Like, I know some people that are phenomenal performers, like proper, their whole job is actual performers. But in person, they're like very much the opposite of who they are. So it doesn't have to be something that you are naturally born with. It is something that you can train and develop, and you literally turn it on. You go, okay, now I'm in this mode, and then you can switch it off. So I think that I have a lot of conversations with people like, oh, I'm not naturally like that. You can train it and you can develop it for you. It doesn't have to be 100% of you all of the time. It's exhausting being me, to be honest.
That's awesome. And it's for me, a lot of that comes down to, because people often then are like, oh, well, is that inauthentic? But for me, it's often about, well, it's understanding the context you're in and how you want to show up for that context. Like, everyone shows up pretty differently at work as they do with their wife and kids, you know, like no one, it's like you never talk to someone else's kids the way you talk to your own kids. It's because it's a different context. And so, yeah.
I was very fortunate because I was in a graduate program when I started my career, and we had a fair bit of learning and development there. And we did the DISC profile. So the different areas of where you sit, And you kind of understand who you are and how you show up. At the time, this was like, oh my God, 11, 10, and 12 years ago. We were given like physical cards of like how to communicate and how to share with someone that is a D profile or an I or an S or a C. So I am all about consumer behavior, all about reading people. So when I learned that really early on, whenever I had a meeting or I had a presentation or anything, I would read that person first and identify in my head, oh, they're a high D. I need to be succinct. They want data and I need to be quick to action. If I maybe speak to someone that's an I, which is more influence, they want a conversation at the start. They want that first 5 minutes to be that like natural, how are you going? And if you don't have that, you just get straight into the data. They feel a bit like, oh, like deer in the headlights, a bit like, oh. Then you have the S and the C. So S is level of dominance, but it also is more, they need the analytical. So they're more logical bias. So if you're trying to sell them something, and you're like, yeah, like it's going to be great. You're going to like do all these things. They're going to be like, how? Mm. What is it going to do? What does my day look like? What is the numbers? What do I get? And then C is a very much, oh, I might be like butchering this. C is sits under I. I think that's also more an element of care. I'll have to Google it and really kind of go to it. But you get my gist as well. Yeah. So what I would do is then read different people. I still use that to this day. Whenever I have a meeting, whenever I have any situation, and I adapt my approach to it. And I think that really kind of helps you regardless of what role you're in. But it's probably helped me the strongest in my corporate career because then you can influence and relate to different people on where they sit.
Yeah. Yeah. I've found I've always I'm very naturally a mirror. Like I'll mirror someone like to an extent just naturally. Like I've always found myself I'll move to that, like, which then can sometimes, and sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, because sometimes someone needs you to bring a different energy. If someone's really high energy, loves to run away with ideas, sometimes they need the person just to bring them back a little bit and go like, you know, oh, but what about this, what about that?
Yes.
And sometimes if someone's low energy, it's like they need you to bring the energy because they want to elevate, but they're not naturally gifted there. They need someone to help bring them up and stuff. But yeah, so it's all interesting, all of those dynamics. I wanted to go back. So you talked a bit about how you had a burnout experience in your career and then you sort of reshuffled your life to sort of support you with that. And when we caught up, you're sort of talking about the three cup theory that you use to help frame that. Do you want to share that, what that is and how you use it in your life and career?
Yeah, absolutely. So after I burned out, I really tried to work out how can I make this sustainable. I also had burnt out in a time of the pandemic. So the three cup theory was running absolutely dry. So the three cups is basically a way for you to see how you have balance. When it comes to burnout, it's not necessarily doing too much. It's actually doing not enough of the right things that balance you. So for example, if you are working late and you're working long hours, you're not going for that walk before work. You're not leaving your desk at lunchtime. You're not hitting that gym class that you wanted after work. You're not going to that dinner with a friend, or you're getting to the weekend and you're so exhausted from work that you're rotting and you're not seeing other people and feeling it. So this kind of helps you have that balance so that you go, no, no, these are the non-negotiables. I need to keep that in. So the first cup is your career. Find like what makes you money, regardless of whatever role that is your career cup. You fill that with your work. Your second cup is the soul and self. I know that sounds a little bit woo-woo. Soul and self means what are the things that are not financial, you don't make money out of them. They are the things that fill you and you get enjoyment out of. The third one is human connection. Humans are people that love to be around others. So when we look at when I burnt out in the pandemic, the soul and self and the human connection cup, dry, because you couldn't go to the gym, you couldn't do the things that you loved, and you couldn't see the people that really fill your cup. So the career cup was absolutely overflowing. So I was like, oh, wow, this was an imbalanced thing. Mm-hmm. So basically then what you want to have a look at, and I also say this in terms if you're wanting to do New Year's resolutions and planning, you want to actually have a look at, instead of like, I want to like do all these things in my career and I want to do X, 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 X. We're very actually often to go straight to the aspirational and career. But what about all the other things that are going to keep you along the way? Because when it comes to burnout, it's all the little habits that you keep in every day that become part of your routine that will then hold you back from burnout. As I said, I've worked for myself. I work sometimes 7 days a week. I haven't hit burnout. So that's kind of how I have those three ones. So for example, career for me is my business. I run two businesses. And that is that cup, my soul and self cup. I love Pilates. I go for a walk every morning. I call it a stomp and pod. And it's basically, I go for a walk around like where I live and I listen to a podcast every day, regardless. I set it into a routine because I thought to myself, if I get 20 to 45 minutes to myself, I can then give that to the rest of others, kind of thing. And I don't get to the end of the day and think, oh my God, I've done nothing for me. So that is the first part. I also wanted to listen to more podcasts as well. So always start my day with that. I also love gardening. I have a garden. I love growing vegetables and everything, herbs and everything. So that is like my thing. My ADHD brain has something to absolutely obsess over and I love it. I also have like Pilates and all those things. And then human connection. So that is where you want to think about how can you get that in regularly. So for example, tonight I have dinner with a friend. We booked that last week. We're both busy. We're both running in businesses. We're like Tuesday, 6 p.m. dinner. It's in the calendar. And then I always make time for like having a coffee with someone. Or when I get to the weekend, it might be like going for a walk. So this kind of helps you have that balanced view. So for example, yesterday I worked a manic day, but I got my walk in the morning and then I had a huge day of meetings. I think I got like a 20-minute walk at lunchtime at like an absolute best. And then I didn't get off meetings and calls until 6:30 at night. And I was like, I have to go to the gym. I was like, I need to. I have to stop working because otherwise I'm going to feel shit. I'm going to get more out of tomorrow if I fuel this cup now. So I went. And I use the Kick app as well. It was a 20-minute Pilates. I did 10 minutes on the elliptical, 20 minutes in the workout, done, home. 30 minutes was enough. And having that, and then I just like read before I went to bed. And then by today, I'm like, cool, ready to rock and roll again. So putting those little things into your day-to-day will help you as well. Because when we talk about mental health, you've got mental health, mental illness, but also mental fitness. You know what I mean? And that's where we talk about our physical fitness. We talk about feeling fit and feeling our physical best. But what are you doing for your mental fitness? What are you doing for, you know, what is all the information that you're consuming regularly? What is how you are having that you time? So those things where you're disconnecting from work and having those other balances into it that kind of become like a bit of like that cardio part for your brain and stuff. And then also relaxation time as well. Like, those times where you let your brain just be bored and like let it just chill out a bit. Yeah. So yeah, that's kind of how I balance it. And then what I do is I have those like how I fill my cup. And then on a Sunday, if I'm like feeling really out of balance, I'll look back at that and I'm like, wow, this week I did not get my morning walk in, or I didn't get to the gym. I didn't see any friends because I was working too much, or I just didn't do all those extra things. So then I'm like, okay, cup's out of balance. Let's bring it back in.
Yeah. Yeah. What does it look like for you to be like feeling mentally fit? What's that look like for you?
Yeah, 100%. So for me to feel mentally fit is able to take on whatever I can within my day, but also able to look at my current lifestyle and go, I have full cups across the board. That is an absolute key part for me. So there's just really sticking into my routine. I am an absolute routine person. I have ADHD, unmedicated as well. So I need routine. I listened to a podcast recently that said, your brain is like a puppy. If you don't train it, it will just piss all over the carpet. And I was like, that is so true. So yeah, feeling mentally fit for me is having a calendar, feeling like I got a lot out of my day. If you're someone that has ADHD, you can absolutely get to a point where you feel like you're procrastinating and you could have done all these things and you didn't hit what you want. But yeah, I would say having a really full cup and also sticking, I've got some kind of like routine habit. So I don't sleep with the phone in the bedroom. One of the best things you can do, your phone is an absolute dopamine drainer first thing in the day. So phone, not in the bedroom. And I do a 5-minute meditation, a gratitude in the morning. I know that that might sound woo-woo to some people, but basically what you do, and I do the same one every day, and it says like, what are three things that you're really looking forward to today? So when you wake up, you might be thinking, oh, I've got to do that. Oh, I've got to do that. Oh, I've got to do these things. No, just like align your brain. What is going on today? How are we getting into it? So I do that. And then I look at my phone while I'm brushing my teeth, because then you can only do it for like 2 minutes until it, you know, tells you to, you finish brushing your teeth. So yeah, I would say definitely when I'm feeling like, yeah, I don't have empty cups across different places, and also prioritizing rest. Like, I am someone that probably struggles to rest a little bit more than often. So yeah, as long as I can make sure that I've just got those times to let my brain get bored in a good way. Because when I actually do that, the ideas in my work are tenfold.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I've been doing some thinking around some different stuff recently, and one of the big ones is around gratitude, and just that, I think particularly gratitude and also optimism, like those two mindsets, I think are some of the greatest influence for having positive career outcomes. Like, if you can approach life with in a position, in a mindset of gratitude, it just unlocks so much for us in terms of how we can approach the day, the way that we're drained by challenges and energized to overcome them. And we see them as an opportunity to grow rather than this thing, just another thing to be miserable about. So, yeah, I think that's an amazing practice to have in your life for just your all-round well-being, but your career as well.
Especially with your career, it is so easy to get stuck in the hedonic treadmill, and I am horrific for the hedonic treadmill. So basically the hedonic treadmill, it means that like you're constantly, you know, shifting it up, and you say to yourself, okay, if I get 10,000 followers on Instagram, I'm going to be happy. You reach 10,000. You're like, okay, that didn't do it. Maybe it's 20,000. You go, okay, I got 20,000. And then you go, okay, I want to do a panel and I want to be invited on a panel. You do a panel. You're like, okay, hang on. That didn't do it. I want to write a book. You write a book and you're like, okay, hang on. That didn't do it. And the thing is, with the hedonic treadmill, you're always, there's like a quote, and it says to people like, maybe like you're not satisfied because you're always raising the bar. So it is very easy to not pay attention to things that used to be so hard for you and things that you struggled with that now just become so part of your everyday. So when I do gratitude, the one that I listen to, it's like things that you're looking forward to, but it can also be like things that you're grateful for in yourself. So for example, when I started working for myself, I hated sales. I would viscerally feel unwell at the thought of having to like reach out and message people on LinkedIn and try to, I was like, what do I say to them? What can I sell to them? And it was so funny because when I would get on a call with them, because I was very authentic in what I did because I'd been in it and I understood, they wanted to work with me, but the visceral thought of sales, absolutely not. And it was mostly because I'd never done it. And I say to people, like, if you are feeling like you can't do something, of course you can't. You haven't done it before. Like, you need to put the reps in, and it's all about having evidence base for your brain to have that self-confidence to go, oh, I can do this thing because I have this background. Anyway, yesterday I just started doing some new sales piece, and I had written a new little like icebreaker to message people on LinkedIn, and I got all these messages. I love this message. This is so great. I'm going to remember you. And I was like, oh, cool. And then I had to stop myself and be like, hang on. You used to feel viscerally unwell at the point of doing sales, and now you've had a great sales call. You're doing this part really well. And so that's where gratitude helps me to stop myself and actually enjoy it. Because if you're always leveling up the bar, you're not taking that moment to like enjoy. I always say to people, like, one of the most like slept on songs is The Climb by Miley Cyrus, because it was in the Hannah Montana movie. Like, that song, the words of it, iconic. Like, that is the song of the hedonic treadmill.
Maybe I need to play this podcast out with that. I'll do some work on the back end. That's really great. That's really powerful message for people, I think, and one that a lot of us are stuck in. So the other thing I wanted to pick your brain on was around employee generated content. And so obviously, like, you're kind of an example of what that can become with this, the way that you started posting online and how it became something, and then can sprout off all kinds of different opportunities. So there's definitely the perspective that I want to explore around. If there's someone that this, you know, they're career driven, they want to be showing up, they want to be building a personal brand, even though it might just be for themselves, even though they're still this working a job, and they're wanting to closely align it maybe with the job or the industry they're in, but it's not necessarily connected to their employer. But then also how someone could be pitching to their boss and saying, hey, like, I want to help contribute to the business through creating content and linking that to our job and our company and that sort of stuff. Could you speak to some of that, the benefits of it, the process that people might go through to look at that and why they should?
Yeah, absolutely. So employee-generated content, also called EGC, traditionally there was called user-generated content, which was UGC, which was where you would pay someone to make video and content as if they are a user of the product. But that has high costs, and also it doesn't build that element of trust, because you're seeing someone that's making content, but it's not you, it's not the business, it's not who they get on a sales call with, it's not who they see in the store, it's not the business itself, right? So we're moving towards employee-based content. That can either be as a business founder themselves, but as you said, there is huge opportunity for personal brands within a business as well. So when it comes to doing that with a business, businesses can be very hesitant towards it, because there's an element of like, oh, but if they build a personal brand, they're going to leave. It's like, no, you should treat people well enough, train them well enough to leave, but treat them well enough to stay. And if they have a personal brand, that's not going to be the reason that they're going to leave. They're probably going to leave because they're a high achiever and they can't get any more growth out of here. So that's where I say the conversation, people, yes, that is a hesitancy that will become, that will come up. But it's not one that I think businesses should be afraid of. So when it comes to building a personal brand, there is definitely an element where you can start to build it yourself. But I would have that conversation with your employer of, hey, I'm looking at doing this. I'm talking about X, Y, and Z. So I actually started building and talking online when I was working full time. I was posting on TikTok every morning before I started work. My employers knew about it. And I'd said to them, I was like, look, I'm going to start posting on TikTok. I'm not going to say anything derogatory. I'm not talking about work. I am purely doing this to unlock opportunities. And they were like, this is great. Like, they were very on board with it as well. And then I started taking it to LinkedIn. So there was an opportunity to build it further there. In terms of building the personal brand, so having that conversation with your employer, there is really great data and statistics in terms of what that means of growing, connecting with someone in terms of a company page. So especially if we have a look at LinkedIn, which is where people are going to mostly build a professional brand, building a company page compared to building a person page, so hard to do, especially because right now LinkedIn is promoting connections and connecting with people. It is not a virality platform. Like, yes, they have video now and you have the opportunity for a video to get out and get reach, but it's not TikTok. It is a connection platform. And B2B is P2P. Like, it is still a person on the other end to a person. So what we're seeing through LinkedIn is more people are actually building their actual person brands and aligning the content to who that is. So you might be the CEO and then what updates they give. You might be the CMO, what updates they give aligned to what's happening in marketing. But that can have a flow-on effect regardless of which different team you're in. So say if you're also in sales, you can then build that connection and follow that sales representative that you would be getting on the call and having a discovery call with. And you get that opportunity to understand their thoughts, their opinions, and who they are before you even meet them. You have the opportunity for you and your brand voice to be in front of, you know, maybe 400 people at a time before you even actually speak to them on a one-to-one. When it comes to individuals, so yeah, that's an element, is whenever I go about it, it's also what's in it for the business. Like, whenever I've tried to influence change and opportunities, always look at it as a business case of what's in it for them kind of piece. And a lot of it is that it's aligning to how LinkedIn is moving. It's aligning to how we want to do business. And it's bringing in that authenticity and that human connection. On the individual, say that you're, you know, wanting to do it for your career and your personal brand, it is absolutely phenomenal for that. So only 1% of people actually post on LinkedIn weekly. The bar is on the floor. LinkedIn content is not TikTok. It is not Instagram. You can have a text post. You can have text and an image. Sometimes I do a text and a carousel. Like, I actually write my LinkedIn posts every day because I'm developing my skills in writing. But that's also because it doesn't have to be to the high production of other platforms. You absolutely can bring that. And there's definitely opportunities now that video is out there as well. But you can also, there's a few different ways to build that brand. So you can have what you post. You can also have what you engage with others as well. So commenting on others in your industry and sharing your opinion and your perspective. So with LinkedIn, that comment that you've left on someone else, that will also come up into the feed. So there's an opportunity for you to be commenting on others if you're not 100% like confident to post your own content yet. But then also it gives an opportunity for your opinions and your views to be in the site for when an employer comes along the way, or when an opportunity to do a speaking piece comes, that they've already seen you. It's the exact same as like when you look at yourself, you're a product and you're selling. So when I work with people in content marketing, the rule is that only 5% of your audience and your customer is ready to buy at any given time. 95% will, but they're going to have 2 to 3 brands in mind. So it's the exact same as it on LinkedIn. Say someone's like, oh, we really need to hire someone in X role. And they'll be like, they're literally initially going to go, oh, there's that person that does that role on LinkedIn. I wonder where they're working. I wonder if they're interested, or I wonder if they know anyone. You're going to go straight to what you know. We all do it. If you were to go on a holiday tomorrow and you need a new suitcase, you've already got 2 brands in your mind. You are creating that for you as a, in your career to unlock opportunities for you. So yeah, it can also start with, if you're not fully like feeling confident in sharing your opinions, you can also curate content as well. Here's what we're seeing in the industry. Here's an update about X, all of those kind of pieces as well. And it basically also turns your LinkedIn into an opportunity to be a lookbook of you, your experiences and your opinions. Even Stephen Bartlett himself, he said that when he looks at people and their resume, he goes straight to their LinkedIn first. And we're going to see a trickle-down effect of that. It is something that I speak with a lot of Americans about, which is personal branding is huge there. I would definitely say Australia, we hold ourselves back because we have the worry of tall poppy syndrome. But yeah, the opportunity is there for those that go for it. I was someone that I had a personal brand on LinkedIn, and I didn't fully take grasp of it until I started working for myself, but I definitely had it there. So when I was redundant in 2022, my LinkedIn profile was where all of it came from. Everyone came out of the woodwork and I was headhunted through there. So that's where I say, I'm not saying personal brand that if you want to start a business, I wasn't starting a business then, but it helped me get a job when I just lost mine.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Previously had Abby Naylor on the podcast, who's all in personal branding on LinkedIn, and I was asking her, like, how many people are recruited through LinkedIn, and like of recruiters, like how much of that happens through LinkedIn? And she's like, oh, like 90%. You know, she's like, I don't have the exact numbers, but yeah, like recruiters are all looking at LinkedIn.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So they use like there's a few backend tools of LinkedIn you can use. So you've got Sales Navigator, but there's also a recruiter tool. So they can then see if you are open to work, they can see the details that you have. So if they're going, okay, I've got this role, and then what they do is they put in filters. So you always want to have an up-to-date LinkedIn, where you work, what you do, what your background is in, because they're going to use those filters to find the people to then go, okay, well, say I need to hire a marketing manager in Melbourne who's got a background in real estate companies. They're going to put in those filters and then go, oh, wow, look, there's 50 people in Melbourne, probably many more than that, that match that criteria. And then they're going to go, and then so you can have an open to work little tab. Your boss, and publicly you can't see it, but you can see it as your recruiter. Who do you think they're going to reach out to? That's 50 to start with. I actually had a conversation with a recruiter from LinkedIn about this yesterday. And he said that they either have their own database and their own email base of who they have. Otherwise, 90% the rest of it, all from LinkedIn. So it's all about making and seeing yourself as a product and to sell yourself. So if you have the first foot forward and you have an up-to-date profile, you have the details of what you do, you might be sharing some updates about what you're doing in your job, that is going to stand out. Because right now, realistically, more people are getting jobs from referrals than they are from just throwing your resume in and hoping for the best out of the 150 in there. And I say that because a lot of businesses are now giving referral bonuses. I know that a fair few of them are about $1,500, but I've had some people message me and say, no, the referral bonus at my work is $15,000.
Whoa.
Yeah. So where I was a referral for someone else. She got $500 when I joined and then $1,000 after like 6 months. So they are there. And that's where you might not necessarily know someone directly, but say that you connected with someone on LinkedIn, your online friends, and then their work goes, oh, we really need someone in this role. You're going to go, oh, I know this person. I've connected with them on LinkedIn. Or the other cool thing is you connect with people on LinkedIn, you share thoughts, you comment on each other's posts, and then you go to in-person events and everyone knows who you are. It is the weirdest feeling, but I went to one and all these people there knew who I was. And the person I was with, she's like, how do you know so many people? And I was like, these are just all my internet friends.
That's awesome. Kim, it's been an absolute pleasure. You're wealth of knowledge and really great, fun person to chat with. So thank you so much for coming on. How can people get in touch with you and find you and work with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, you can find me on LinkedIn. You will see everywhere my name says Kim Elizabeth James. That's an SEO thing. That's because, you know, if you search Kim James, there's a lot of people named that, but Kim Elizabeth James, party of one. So yeah, find me on LinkedIn. Also connect with me as well if you're wanting to make new connections and have someone to comment on your post. Otherwise, you can also find me on TikTok and Instagram under the Career Girl Diaries. So that is where I will be.
Thank you so much.
Perfect.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And let's connect on LinkedIn so that we can keep the conversation going. Or head to my website and download my free resource, The Career Building Principles. Bye for now.